has a good idea have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young in with you for the remainder of the hour. Hey, thanks for staying up late with us here on Camo X. I've received a lot of emails during the past week, and I wanted to give out my email address because if you've got some questions about the show, you want to interact at all with the host, feel free. You can always send me an email. My office at my law firm is Harris Dowell, Fisher and Young, and you can email me at any time, B Young, that's the letter B, Y-O-U-N-G, because it's, you know, it's good to be young, B Young at harrisdowell.com, H-A-R-R-I-S, as in Sam, D as in David, O-W-E-L-L. And of course, you know, if you've listened to Camo X for any amount of time, you can always catch us, even on FM. That's where I listen to Camo X when I'm driving around town. I listen to 98.7 FM. Or you can listen on, download the Odyssey app. You can catch the show at any time. I've even had some folks who will email me after hearing it on a podcast. So any time you want to shout out to me by email, feel free to do so. And you've also heard me mention, and I've already gotten a lot of great texts this evening, but radio is truly the one of the only mediums where you get to be a part of the show. You get to direct, have some input on the direction of the show, the topics that we discuss, the comments that are made, and the analysis that is provided. So that's something you cannot do with streaming. You can't do it with podcasts. You can't do it watching television, but you can do it right here on Camo X in a way that is simply not possible with any other medium. So our phone lines and text line will be open for, excuse me, for the rest of the hour, 314-436-7900. In the next hour, I'm going to be talking about the protests, but from a little bit of a different perspective, because last week I spent better part of an hour talking about the protesters, why legally they are in the wrong, what the First Amendment provides, what it doesn't provide, and what the police can or cannot do when it comes to these protests that have disrupted college campuses literally from coast to coast. And after that, there, in response, there has been a bill that just passed the House of Representatives today, I believe, in response to that. And I'm not sure, in fact, I am sure, I don't really agree with this bill either. I think it's an overreaction. And in the next segment, after we're going to be taking a break here in a few minutes, in the next segment, I'm going to be breaking down this law that passed. It's a bill, rather. It hasn't been signed into law, hasn't been passed by the Senate. But we're going to be talking about that in the next break after coming up here on a break in a few minutes. Until then, though, I want to talk to Chris, who's called in this evening. Hey, Chris, welcome to Camo X.
What's going on, big guy?
Oh, it's good to hear your voice, sir.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you, Brad. Likewise. I wonder, maybe they should put up some billboards around town. Like there was a game back in the 80s, I think, Where's Waldo? And they ought to put one, we'll go, Where's Kim Gardner? They ought to put up some billboards. I have a feeling that lady's hiding. I don't know if we're going to see her make an appearance.
You're cracking me up, Chris, because that was in my stack of stuff, and I thought, oh, everybody's tired of talking about Kim Gardner. But just to kind of bring the audience up to speed, Chris, and then I want your input on this.
Sure.
What happened is that Scott Fitzpatrick, the state auditor, has a report that's finished, and it's extremely critical, according to reports, of Kim Gardner's office, including perhaps misappropriation of funds, not fulfilling the duties of her office. Scott Fitzpatrick wants to actually talk to Kim Gardner to get her perspective before he releases this report. But suddenly she's disappeared. It's like Carmen Sandiego. Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
Right.
And she's gone. I mean, the only way she could maybe. Oh, I got a great idea, Chris. Maybe Kim Gardner is hiding on MSNBC because there's no place in America like MSNBC where you could hide and nobody will ever see you.
Well, it's funny, Brad. I called another local show this morning. I I just remarked, maybe was she down in one of the caves in like Silver Dollar City, but I just.
The Well, let me ask you this though, Chris. Why do you think she's hiding? And from your perspective, what interest does Kim Gardner have in being in basically in hiding? What? How does that benefit her?
Well, Brad, you have a better insight into it. You're more. You're more schooled on the, you know, I guess the goings on with politics, but I just think she was so derelict in her duty. I mean, she just doesn't want to face the scrutiny of Mr. Fitzgerald, and who's, I applaud him for doing his job, but I someone said that she has her husband's like a gym or track coach down in one of the southern states, so that might be where she's at. I don't know for sure, but for the fact she might not want to face the scrutiny or whatever, but she was how derelict of the dereliction of duty she had in her job. So I just often wonder.
Yes, I wonder too, Chris, and I think she's hiding out in Florida, but I'm going to tell you what. Tomorrow, I'm going to go to Schnucks or Deerberg's, and I'm going to go straight to the dairy section and see if I see her on a milk carton. So I'm going to be doing that tomorrow, because I don't know how else to track her down. But Chris, I appreciate you calling in this evening, and thanks for listening
to
KMOX.
Keep up the good work, Brad.
I'll keep up the good work, my friend. Thanks for calling in. Hey, we're going to take a break, and when we come back from this break, we're going to talk about this, what I consider to be an overreaction to the protesters, next on KMOX. Welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young in with you this evening. And as I teased before the break, last week we spent an entire hour talking about the protesters. And we had some fantastic discussions. We had folks calling in talking about how the protesters were agreeing with me, in essence, stating that the protesters were violating the law. It was interfering with the rights of other students, other professors, other people who work on campus. And it was also violating the law and should be, at least if not shut down, it should be limited by time, place, and manner. That's what the Constitution specifies according to the Supreme Court. You can limit free speech, you can regulate free speech in what's called time, place, and manner. Just very briefly, what that means is you can regulate it by time. You can say you can protest all day long, but you can't protest at 3 o'clock in the morning. You can limit it by place. You can't protest in the middle of a building. You can't protest on private property necessarily, but we're going to designate an area for you to voice your free speech concerns, and that's the place restriction. And the manner is also a limitation. If you want to use a bullhorn in the day, that may be okay, but you can't use a bullhorn at 3 o'clock in the morning. So some folks were calling in, disagreeing with me. We had some excellent, excellent discussions last week. Since then, and I believe this happened at the very tail end of last week, the House of Representatives passed an anti-Semitism bill, which prohibits anti-Semitic speech. And before I dive into this topic, I need to make sure that you understand that with free speech, just like there can be time, place, and manner restrictions, the Supreme Court, and this is something that most people simply are not aware of, the Supreme Court has routinely ruled that hate speech is protected speech. Now, why on earth would they do that? Let's talk about this for just a moment, because it's important for us all to understand. Hate speech doesn't mean that you agree with the speech that's being given. The concept of hate speech and the reason why it's protected is this. Because if you had restrictions under the First Amendment that could allow for the prohibition of hate speech, then it becomes a matter of subjective opinion as to what constitutes hate speech. Let me give you a quick, silly, ridiculous example, okay? I'm about as bald as a guy can be that doesn't shave his head or doesn't play in the NBA. So that's what I am. So, for example, if if it were considered to be hate speech, if you could ban hate speech, then I could run for office, get a whole bunch of my fellow bald citizens in the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate to pass a law that says criticizing someone who is follically challenged constitutes hate speech and can be banned under the First Amendment. And then people would be prohibited from criticizing and making fun of individuals such as myself who are follically challenged. Now, I'm giving you a ridiculous example, but that shows you how if you allow for the banishment of hate speech, then you can qualify anything as hate speech. And then once you do, you can effectively nullify someone's right to free speech. The greatest example of this is with the ACLU in the 1970s. There was going to be a march up in Skokie, Illinois, which is outside of Chicago. Skokie, Illinois is a primarily Jewish community. And the Ku Klux Klan wanted to have a demonstration. They had a permit. It was during a parade or some type of activity. And they wanted to have a demonstration to give people reasons why Jews were bad. Now, by anyone's definition, by most anyone's definition, except for apparently Antifa and the Ku Klux Klan, that's wrong, okay? Criticizing Jewish Americans, criticizing Jewish individuals based upon their religion is reprehensible, it's morally repugnant, and people shouldn't do it, right? But the question is, can they be allowed to give that message? And the ACLU decided to represent the Ku Klux Klan. Now, the ACLU, as anyone knows, is a very left-wing liberal organization. That's fine. But I was so proud when I got to law school and was reading about what the ACLU did. Even though the speech of the Ku Klux Klan people, from my perspective, again, is morally repugnant and is indefensible morally, ethically, or from any sense of right and wrong, it's simply disgusting speech. But that doesn't make it illegal. And so the ACLU intuitively knew that and actually went to court to allow the Ku Klux Klan to spew hate speech against Jews. And in fact, some of the ACLU attorneys that represented the Ku Klux Klan were themselves Jewish. Now, that may seem counterintuitive, but it's not. Because if we are allowed to ban some types of speech based upon the content of that speech, then the government could ban any type of speech by simply changing the nature or the character of the prohibition. That's why popular speech doesn't need to be protected, only hate speech. But it doesn't mean that you get to run afoul of other areas of the law like time, manner, and place restrictions. So I'm going to dive into this bill that passed last week, but Jan's been holding for a very long time. Hey, Jan, welcome to Camo X.
Hi, Brad. I love your show.
Thank you.
And a couple of comments. One, I wonder if these protests would take place if it were 10 below.
I'm sorry, if it were 10 below zero, like the temperature-wise?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that. Yeah. And the other thing, too, Jan, you know, if we prohibited pizza delivery on campuses, wouldn't those protests, like, disappear in a matter of hours if the pizza delivery was cut off?
Sure. Or Chick-fil-A and Taco Bell and everything else.
Yeah,
and
no.
Somebody is providing all that food to those people.
You're not banning speech. You could just ban Grubhub and DoorDash.
Absolutely.
And these things would dissipate overnight. Now, you know what? Apparently what has been banned on these protests is deodorant, because I understand that the protesters don't smell very good. But that's a whole different subject, Jan. So what else is on your mind?
Okay. Well, secondly, I think that, we all know that most of us probably think that somebody financially is backing this, and that there are professional protesters coming in and leading the cause and bringing signs that are all the same and et cetera, et cetera. But I think that young people, there are a lot of young people that age who come along just for the fun of it. And, you know, their roommate or their friends or somebody's going to the protest or their professor is telling them to go. And they don't even, we all know that there's a lot of these young people who don't even know why they're there. They have no idea about the history of anti-Semitism.
They don't.
Or what happened 80 years ago or anything like that, or what happened even yesterday at the National Remembrance Day. And I think that they get, a lot of them get caught up. The adrenaline gets pumping about the fun of this and being in this group. And just being together, being young people. And I think as a young person myself, now it was a totally different issue, but it was the when in the early 80s when there were abortion clinics and sit-ins at the clinics. And, of course, it wasn't a lot of fun by any means. It was a life-or-death situation.
Sure.
By no means was it fun. And I participated at trying to prevent people from going into the clinics. But
likewise,
but
hey, Jan,
tell you,
but
sorry?
Hang on, let me cut you off there. Not to cut you off, but
sure.
you made a great point that I want to make sure that we don't just let slide by. And that is, when you were involved in protesting for right to life, do you think that the left that's today claiming that protests are allowed at any time, any place, under any circumstances, they cannot be distracted in any way or diminished in any way because of the First Amendment, do you think those people would have the exact same view of your right to protest for right to life and the inhumanity of abortion? Would they have the same respect for your First Amendment rights when you're outside of an abortion clinic?
I doubt that very much they have the opposite view about abortion.
Oh, I think it's much stronger than a doubt, Jan. I can guarantee you that the people going into that clinic who were as progressive could be, were looking out there and saying those crazy right-wing, right-to-lifers need to be banned and removed from the property. How dare they protest outside of our facility? And these are the same people that are protesting on campuses today.
I agree.
Good.
Anyhow, that's it.
All
right.
Love your
show.
Well, thank you for listening. Thanks for calling in, and thanks for listening to Camel X.
You're welcome. Thank you, Brad. Bye.
Bye-bye. You know, it's interesting that Jan made one point, and I'm going to have to go to a break here because I'm glad that Jan called, but to finish my thought about the bill, I'm going to do that after the break. But we do know, in fact, who has been funding the protesters, the professional protesters, and the folks who have been coming in and creating the disturbance. We know that. And if you mention George Soros, people start saying, oh, my goodness, it's a conspiracy theory. But listen, Politico magazine, Politico, it's an online website, very big, very prominent, very mainstream. They reported the funding mechanism just 2 days ago. Sorry about that. And so they actually published where the money comes from and how they got there. And we know that primarily that these organizations that are funding the protesters are being pushed by George Soros, also the Rockefeller family and the Pritzker family. And if the Pritzker family sounds familiar, it's because, as you know, the governor of Illinois is named Governor Pritzker. So it's not him directly, but it is his family that have been donating to these organizations to get food, supplies, plywood, pizza, everything but deodorant, apparently, is being delivered to these protesters. And it's coming primarily from those individuals, George Soros, the Rockefeller family, and the Pritzker family. But just like, you know, if you've taken a class in driver's ed and they say, if you're going towards the left side of the ditch, you have don't make sure that you don't overcorrect. Because if you do and you're sliding your car and you overcorrect, what's going to happen? You're going to end up on the right side of the ditch. I think that's what Congress has done with this bill that was passed last week regarding anti-Semitism. I'll break that down next here on At Your Service, KMOX. Service, Brad Young in this evening. And before I get to that anti-Semitism bill, I want to go to Mike because Mike's been holding for a while. Hey, Mike, welcome to KMOX.
Is this you, Brad?
This is me.
All right. Hey, I was wondering about, you said you're going to talk about Trump a little bit.
Yep.
Looks like the case in Georgia is a no-go. Looks like the one in Florida is on hold indefinitely, and the one in New York is obviously stupid. I want to hear your opinion on where you think this stuff's going.
Well, and hang on, because I want to discuss with you. I'm going to throw out some ideas and then see what you think about it, Mike. But first of all, the documents case in Florida, the judge there has placed it on indefinite hold. So there is no chance that's going to go to trial before the November election. Regarding the case in Georgia, the Georgia Supreme Court has accepted the appeal of the judge's decision regarding the prosecutor, Fannie Willis, and whether or not she has a conflict of interest, which she does. There's no question in my mind about that legally. But the question is, will it be enforced by the Georgia Supreme Court to the extent where she has to step away from the case? So until that gets resolved, the case in Florida or the case in Georgia cannot move forward. So that's not going to happen before the November election. So the only trial that's left that will happen before the November election is the trial that we're currently in. That's the hush money trial in New York that D.A. Bragg has brought. And that case is really baseless from a legal perspective, and it wouldn't even be existing anywhere in this country except for New York City and perhaps Martha's Vineyard. Outside of that, this case would not ever see the light of day. What are your thoughts on the legitimacy, Mike, of the current hush money trial?
Well, you got a judge. It's all about the judge, right? I mean, right. You got a judge that's really pro-Democrat, and he can tie the hands of the defense, right?
Well, sure he can, and that's why. And listen, I am not a pro-Trump cheerleader. Anyone who's listened to the show knows that. I've even broken down the documents case in Florida as suggesting that I think Trump is not only guilty, but will be convicted on that charge when it eventually goes to trial. But about this hush money case, Mike, listen, the judge is very biased, and I can give you one very quick example. Did you hear any of the coverage about what Stormy Daniels testified about in the trial this week?
Well, I heard it was 4 hours of nothing.
Yes, but it was 4 hours of titillation and salation. It's very salaciousness was the things that she testified about. And that had absolutely nothing to do with whether or not the Trump Organization committed fraud in their bookkeeping department at Trump International. Nothing whatsoever. Had no bearing. In fact, the relationship with Stormy Daniels had been admitted, and the fact that she had been paid hush money was admitted, so she never should have even testified, and yet she was allowed to testify. And why do you think that? Why do you think the judge allowed her to testify, Mike? I think there's a very good answer to this question.
Well, of course, you know, it's going to help the prosecution.
Exactly, because of guilt by association. Because, listen, the one thing that came out of those 4 hours of testimony, Mike, was that Stormy Daniels is you know, she's not a Girl Scout, all right? She's not a nun. She's not a Girl Scout. She's not a person of high moral character. And so I think the attempt of the prosecution is to say, look at how in the mud Stormy Daniels is, and Donald Trump was right there with her, even though it had no bearing whatsoever on the legalities of the charges that Donald Trump is facing.
Okay. Now, I'd like to get back to the Florida case where you said you're convinced that he's going to be convicted.
Yes.
Well, that's kind of scary.
Why is that scary?
Well, if he's convicted, won't he face jail time?
Well, not if he's convicted. If he gets elected president, then he could not be convicted while he's in office. Part of the Trump's argument with presidential immunity is accurate. Part of it is that a president, a sitting president, cannot be convicted of a crime or be sued in civil court while he or she is in office. The question is, can they be tried and convicted when they're outside of the office? And that's where I disagree with Trump's assertion of immunity. But if this case in Florida does not go to trial until after the election, then it will be postponed until he leaves office.
Well, he's got to win then.
Well, I think that's his best strategy at this point, is to become president. I'm sure that's his strategy, that if he becomes president, many of these cases will go away, but not the case in New York, because that's a state case, and there will be a jury verdict before the November election. But, Mike, I appreciate you calling in this evening, sir. Thank you.
You're so informative. Thanks, Brett.
Great to talk to you, sir. But let me go through briefly this bill that was passed by the House of Representatives last week. And I don't agree with it, even though you've heard me talk at length about how the protesters violated the law, the protesters broke the law, the protesters should be arrested for what they did in terms of violating time, place, and manner restrictions of the First Amendment. However, this bill that passed last week, I think, is an overcorrection. Why? Because it bans any speech that the bill defines as being anti-Semitic. Now, the question becomes, what does anti-Semitic speech look like? What is it? And there's some actual examples in this bill of what anti-Semitic speech would look like. So, for example, and I'm quoting from the bill, accusing Jews as a people of being responsible for real or imagined wrongdoing committed by single Jewish person or group, unquote. Let's look at that for a moment. That is that speech. Could that speech be hate speech? Absolutely. But would it violate the law? Would it violate the First Amendment concept of free speech for a person to say the Jewish people are responsible for inventing new Coke that came out in the 1980s that everyone panned? Everyone said new Coke tasted terrible, and then they went back to the original formula. Okay, let's say you're on the street corner and you're saying the country of Israel is responsible for giving us new Coke, and I'm very upset about that. That's real or imagined? It's actually imagined. I just made it up on the spot. But should someone go and be held responsible, either criminally or civilly, for making that statement? And I think the answer to that is clearly no. Even if it's wrong, even if it's misguided, even if it's incorrect, even if it's said in a way to try to demean the Jewish people, that violates the concept of the First Amendment, which is that even what we label as reprehensible speech needs to be protected. And the other problem that I have with that is from a Christian perspective. I've obviously on this show, I've talked quite a bit about my faith, I'm a very strong believing Christian. And looking at this, it's been pointed out that if you said, and this is an incorrect statement, what I'm about to say, that the Jews as a whole, the Jews are responsible for killing Jesus. Now, I'm going to break that down in just a moment. But making that statement would be a violation of this bill and could give rise to civil liabilities. But again, I've already pointed out how that violates the First Amendment. But now it's incorrect. The Jews as a whole, I don't believe, are responsible for the crucifixion of Christ. But certainly the Sanhedrin are responsible, and the Pharisees were responsible for turning Jesus over to the Roman authorities to be prosecuted, to be found guilty by fiat, and then executed on a cross. So if someone points that out, I understand that from a Jewish person's perspective, that has been historically used as a basis to really to be harmful towards the Jews in general and the Jewish nation in particular. And that is absolutely wrong. There's no Christian on the planet that should be upset or mad at what the Pharisees and the Sanhedrin did 2,000 years ago, especially in light of the fact that Jesus himself said, this was the reason why I came, was to die and to be buried and to rise again. So the Sanhedrin and the Pharisees were actually being used to accomplish God's will and that purpose. I'm not trying to turn this into a Sunday school lesson. What I'm trying to let you know is that type of speech, or derivations on that type of speech, maybe even incorrect summaries of that biblical account, that could give rise to someone being liable under this anti-Semitism law, and that certainly violates the First Amendment. What do you think? Should someone be prosecuted. Now, this law creates, or it's a bill, rather, it's not been passed into law. The Senate has not done anything with it yet, and it wouldn't surprise me if the Senate never touches this bill in any way. But should Congress be passing laws prohibiting hate speech when even the laws that they're passing might themselves be discriminatory against other religious speech? What do you think? 314-436-7900. Call or text. We've had a lot of texts here in this evening. I'll be responding to those during the break. Would love to hear your opinions next in the next segment on At Your Service, KMOX. Sliding into the final segment here on At Your Service for a Wednesday evening. But don't forget, tomorrow, if you want to catch me over, I'll be filling in for Annie Fry on our sister station, 97.1 FM Talk, from noon to 3 tomorrow. So you can catch that show tomorrow if you like. Jack has been holding through the very long break. Hey, Jack, welcome to KMOX.
Hey, Brad, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, sir. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to keep talking about these protests on these college campuses.
Okay.
I just don't understand what they're trying to accomplish. A bunch of college students causing havoc on these college campuses.
Well, I could tell you what I think the purpose is. And if you look at what the concept is for the radical left, and there's many, many books on this topic, the idea is that social upheaval has a benefit whenever you want to overthrow and topple the establishment culture. And so, and from my perspective, I think the goal is just to overthrow the establishment culture. That's why George Soros is funding to great degree and measure what's going on college campuses. So if you can create chaos in our culture and chaos in our society and invite police to overreact, to get physical, to harm the protesters, then it becomes countercultural in order to cast the culture that's currently in power as being the bad guys. So I think ultimately that's the goal.
That's pretty scary, isn't it?
Oh, it's very scary because they want to topple not only our culture, but capitalism. If you look at, for example, the organization Black Lives Matter, it's rooted in Marxism. That's not a myth. You can look it up. It's available online. It's available in their writings. Marxism is all about a collection, a collective government. There's no private property. Ultimately, at the end of the day, that's the kind of revolution I think that these protesters are going for.
Absolutely. Thanks, Brad. I really enjoy listening to you, man.
Great. I'm glad you are listening, and thanks for calling in, Jack. Barbara has also been holding. Hey, Barbara, what's on your mind this evening?
Yes, sir. I wanted to say that I don't believe in hate speech at all, if for any group. And basically, my dad, he served in the whole of World War II as a volunteer. So did my grandfather over in Jefferson Barracks. And my dad was on top secret bases trying to fight for this country so we would be free from hate speech and from the Germans that we won the war. We won the war because of men that stood up, and they're all over Europe, and they're dead, and over the United States, and they brought their bodies back. And I will tell you that hate speech is terrible.
Yes.
It started in Germany.
It is.
And it caused a war.
It is terrible. But, Barbara, here's the point, and if you mistook my point, I apologize. I'm not in favor of hate speech. Hate speech is reprehensible. It's awful. It's repugnant and disgusting. But at the same point, in the same time, look at World War II in Germany. They banned and they called hate speech any speech that was critical of the German government was classified as hate speech. And so because of that, the German government, the Nazi government, could prohibit individuals from speaking. So my point is, even though it's repugnant, reprehensible, and morally bankrupt, it has to be protected legally, because if not, then even good speech can be relabeled as hate speech, just like it was in Nazi Germany, and individuals would lose their freedom of speech.
Well, the problem is with hate speech and with that they murdered the Jewish people. They murdered the Jewish people over
right.
Germany.
Right, but that wasn't speech that was doing it. They were doing that genocide because they hated Jews. It wasn't the speech. It was the fact that they were morally bankrupt. And Barbara, I'm very sorry. We're coming up on the very end of the show. And if you would love to email me, I would love to exchange more ideas with you. BeYoung@HarrisDowell.com. And I appreciate you calling in this evening.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you. And I really appreciated that call, and I wish I had another 5 minutes to go into detail, because she's right. Hate speech is wrong. But yet, we have to allow it, or else good speech will be banned. Coming up next, Dave Glover Show, KMOX. Sliding into the final segment here on At Your Service for a Wednesday evening. But don't forget, tomorrow, if you want to catch me over, I'll be filling in for Annie Fry on our sister station, 97.1 FM Talk, from noon to 3 tomorrow. So you can catch that show tomorrow if you like. Jack has been holding through the very long break. Hey, Jack, welcome to KMOX.
Hey, Brad, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, sir. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to keep talking about these protests on these college campuses.
Okay.
I just don't understand what they're trying to accomplish. A bunch of college students causing havoc on these college campuses.
Well, I could tell you what I think the purpose is. And if you look at what the concept is for the radical left, and there's many, many books on this topic, the idea is that social upheaval has a benefit whenever you want to overthrow and topple the establishment culture. And so, and from my perspective, I think the goal is just to overthrow the establishment culture. That's why George Soros is funding to great degree and measure what's going on college campuses. So if you can create chaos in our culture and chaos in our society and invite police to overreact, to get physical, to harm the protesters, then it becomes countercultural in order to cast the culture that's currently in power as being the bad guys. So I think ultimately that's the goal.
That's pretty scary, isn't it?
Oh, it's very scary, because they want to topple not only our culture, but capitalism. If you look at, for example, the organization Black Lives Matter, it's rooted in Marxism. That's not a myth. You can look it up. It's available online. It's available in their writings. Marxism is all about a collective government. There's no private property. Ultimately, at the end of the day, that's the kind of revolution I think that these protesters are going for.
Absolutely. Thanks, Brad. I really enjoy listening to you, man.
Great. I'm glad you are listening, and thanks for calling in, Jack. Barbara has also been holding. Hey, Barbara, what's on your mind this evening?
Yes, sir. I wanted to say that I don't believe in hate speech at all. It's for any group. And basically, my dad, he served in the whole of World War II as a volunteer. So did my grandfather over in Jefferson Barracks. And my dad was on top secret bases trying to fight for this country so we would be free from hate speech and from the Germans that we won the war. We won the war because of men that stood up, and they're all over Europe, and they're dead, and over the United States, and they brought their bodies back. And I will tell you that hate speech is terrible.
Yes.
It started in Germany.
It is.
And it caused a war.
It is terrible. But, Barbara, here's the point, and if you mistook my point, I apologize. I'm not in favor of hate speech. Hate speech is reprehensible. It's awful. It's repugnant and disgusting. But at the same point, in the same time, look at World War II in Germany. They banned and they called hate speech any speech that was critical of the German government was classified as hate speech. And so because of that, the German government, the Nazi government, could prohibit individuals from speaking. So my point is, even though it's repugnant, reprehensible, and morally bankrupt, it has to be protected legally, because if not, then even good speech can be relabeled as hate speech, just like it was in Nazi Germany, and individuals would lose their freedom of speech.
Well, the problem is with hate speech and with that they murdered the Jewish people. They murdered the Jewish people over
right.
in Germany.
But that wasn't speech that was doing it. They were doing that genocide because they hated Jews. It wasn't the speech. It was the fact that they were morally bankrupt. And Barbara, I'm very sorry. We're coming up on the very end of the show. And if you would love to email me, I would love to exchange more ideas with you. BeYoung@harrisdowell.com. And I appreciate you calling in this evening.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you. And I really appreciated that call, and I wish I had another 5 minutes to go into detail, because she's right. Hate speech is wrong. But yet, we have to allow it, or else good speech will be banned. Coming up next, Dave Glover Show, KMOX.